Hello and welcome to the fifth edition of Exploring Enterprise, the podcast series from the Enterprise Research Centre. I'm Professor Stephen Roper, Director at ERC, and I'm joined today by my colleague Anastasia Rhee, Research Fellow at the Enterprise Research Centre, Jonathan Withy, Head of Business Development at Planet Mark, and Catherine Westerby, Senior Policy Advisor and Business Engagement Lead at the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. The theme for today's session is a very topical one, given that as we speak, the COP26 conference is taking place in Glasgow. And we're focusing today on the very important theme of net zero and SMEs. So Anastasia, I think we're starting with you first today. You've been working with colleagues at the ERC on research into SME and SMEs and net zero. So to start us off, can you tell us a little bit about what we know about the extent to which SMEs are engaging and adopting net zero practices?
Yes, thank you very much, Stephen. Yes, here at the Enterprise Research Center, we have been conducting this research on net zero practices of UK SMEs for over 1 year now, drawing on a Business Futures survey, which interviewed about 1,000 SMEs in the UK. And actually, we started preparing this work just before COVID-19 happened. And our field work, fortunately or unfortunately, have coincided with the COVID-19 pandemic. So our field work was conducted in autumn 2020. And of course, this year has nothing about normal about it. So in the beginning of the fieldwork, we were slightly worried that businesses would have much more urgent actually concerns and issues, and we would struggle to make them talk about net zero. But actually, we were quite positively surprised, and we found that about only one third of UK SMEs reported they did nothing to reduce their carbon emissions. So this means that more than two and in three of UK SMEs are already engaging with the net zero agenda in some kind of way. So we've learned a couple of things about these SMEs. And we, first of all, I think we can confidently say that these SMEs who are adopting net zero practices, they are in all sectors of UK economy and they are in all parts of the country. And they can be young, they can be old established businesses, they can be very small, and they also be on the larger side of definition of SME. So although, of course, there's a little bit high uptake among medium-sized businesses of net zero practices than among smaller businesses. But one thing we can say is that all the businesses engage with net zero practices in different ways, because each business is unique in its way. And of course, there's quite a lot of things which are influenced by particularities of industry. So in the survey, we have been asking about 8 sustainability practices which are relevant to the overall population of SMEs. And some businesses would be engaged only one practice, and others would be engaged with all 8 of them. So among these businesses who are already engaging with net zero agenda, we actually found that typically businesses would engage simultaneously with 3 different practices. So it is quite fair to say that the UK SMEs are adopting a portfolio of practices rather than focusing on one particular activity.
So Anastasia, you were talking there about these net zero practices. Give us a couple of examples of the type of things that SMEs might be doing, or what do you mean by these practices?
So, well, actually, when we were looking at these practices, we broadly split them into 2 groups. So one group is more on the technological side of things. So things like making changes in the production process, adopting a renewable energy, for example, or conducting environmental research and development programs. And we also looked at organizational changes that SMEs could bring into their practice. And among these organizational practices, we were looking at, for example, environmental technical training, and also, for example, the reports and audits on environmental impact of an SME, and for example, as well, market research in low carbon products and services. So what we can see is that organizational solutions are quite often less expensive and probably slightly easier to implement rather than technological solutions, which are demanding probably some more investment and more capital as well. So what is quite interesting that on the organizational side of things, the most commonly used practice would be training in environmental matters. So about one in three UK SMEs said that they engaged with environmental training. And the other one, which is closely to this practice, is undertaking environmental reports and audits. And actually, we think that even these smaller steps in organizational practices of SMEs are actually quite beneficial for SMEs from different points of view. So for example, environmental reports and audits, they can pinpoint some potential areas for further intervention, but at the same time, they could help business to improve their overall communication with their customers, who are increasingly more interested in more transparency and some educated choices. At the same time, for example, if we look at environment and training on environmental matters, this also can be quite helpful because, well, on one side, it can enhance some knowledge on of employees regarding net zero, but at the same time, it might spur some kind of innovativeness, some entrepreneurial mindset of employees, which in the future might be beneficial to the business and business itself. When looking a little bit on technological side of things, these things may be very different depending on the type of the business. And one of the very common solutions we noticed is the practice to replace fossil energy by a more renewable source of energy. So it's just about one in three of SMEs switch to renewable energy according to our data. So, but the most frequently cited practice would be to introduce some changes in production and distribution processes. So about two in five UK SMEs said they introduced these. And of course, it would be very different depending on the type of production. If I had to take an example, but probably now Scotch whiskey producers, they are under the light because the COP26 is in Glasgow, but also because they have committed to achieve net zero quite before the overall of the country, so by 2040. So they need heat for distillation process. To generate heat, they need energy. And so to reduce the impact on environment, they could optimize a production process so they use less energy than less energy as possible. But at the same time, one of the most important things they could do is to change the energy they use to produce this heat. And for example, they are already adapting such things like biomass, hydrogen, heat pumps, et cetera, to replace fossil energy by renewable energy. But of course, they might also think about optimization of their distribution processes in order to reduce emissions during transportation of this bottled whiskey around the world.
Thanks, Anastasia. I think that's given us a very good flavour of what the landscape looks like, the current landscape in SMEs. Catherine, let's turn to you. As someone who works in government policy within BEIS, I guess one of your aims is to try and encourage SMEs to continue to move towards net zero or at least start the journey. Can you give us a brief overview of what the work that you're doing and how you're trying to encourage SMEs to begin or continue that net zero journey?
Definitely. So I head up what's called the Together for Our Planet Business Climate Leaders campaign. That's just a long way of saying the Small Business Engagement campaign ahead of COP26. So it's obviously spearheaded by Andrew Griffith MP, who's our net zero business champion. He was appointed by the PM in November last year and sort of does what it says in the tin, really. It's meant to sort of engage small businesses on the race to zero, on net zero as a concept, because what we understand is obviously that, lots of small businesses, lots of ordinary small businesses, don't really understand what net zero means as a concept and don't really understand what net zero means for them as a business. So this campaign, again, is all about sort of bringing it, you know, down to the local level, explaining what net zero is all about, explaining why it's important for them to join the race to zero in the year leading up to COP, which is obviously happening as we speak. And it's just a really exciting opportunity, again, to sort of take this out to, the majority of, businesses in the UK. So within Andrew's remits, obviously, we have what we call sort of a big business engagement campaign. So that's engaging the FTSE 100. You've got the smaller micro business campaign, which is what I've been leading on, and that's all about mass mobilization. And then we had the Global Investment Summit a couple of weeks ago. So it's just, again, a really exciting opportunity to engage small businesses. And we often have to make the case, again, you know, you've alluded to the fact that, I think Anastasia mentioned, you know, it's been a really difficult year, couple of years really, for small businesses. So we kind of have to justify, why are we talking to small businesses about climate change when they've got so many other things on their mind, you know, not least of which, you know, coping with the pandemic and recovering from that. So I think we've really got to make the case to small businesses as to, you know, what net zero actually means for them and what the benefits of net zero are for them as businesses. So we often point out that business and industry account for sort of around a quarter of UK territorial emissions. And within that, small businesses account for around half of those emissions. So it's just really important that collectively small businesses see that they have a really important role to play in reducing our territorial emissions. But not just that, you know, the core message of this campaign is that net zero is good for business. And that's a message that we really want to get across to small businesses, you know, just really sort of outlining the benefits that they can get from moving to a sort of a lower carbon future. So in terms of the objectives of our campaign, we obviously, as I mentioned, want to raise awareness of climate change. So we know that small businesses, from our research and our engagement, really do care about climate change. It might not be top of their list, top of their agenda at all times, but it's definitely something that they care about. The problem is moving from understanding climate change and wanting to do something to being able to take action on climate change. So again, this campaign is about encouraging ordinary small businesses to take that first step, to say, you know, what's the first thing I can do as a small business? It's join the Race to Zero. So obviously the Together for Our Planet campaign, it is part of the broader global Race to Zero campaign. And sort of the way in for small businesses to join the Race to Zero is via the SME Climate Hub. So Race to Zero is an umbrella campaign encompassing lots of different ways in for businesses to make that commitment. So we have been encouraging all small businesses to visit the SME Climate Hub and make the SME climate commitments, which is obviously free. It's really easy to do. It's a really short form. And again, we're sort of pitching it as this really important first step for small businesses along their net zero journey. And we do like to phrase it that way because we don't expect businesses to change overnight. We don't expect, you know, all businesses to sort of radically transform what they're doing, to undertake some really costly investment. It's not about that at all. It's about saying, look, as a small business, what can I do? I can join the Race to Zero. I can make the SME climate commitments. And importantly, lots of the actions that we're suggesting that small businesses might want to take are things they may have been doing already. For example, you know, looking at the benefits that we want to make sure that we retain from behaviours that have been adopted during the pandemic, for example, you know, traveling less, for example, working more from home, doing more digital conferencing like we're doing now. So it's more about, you know, allowing small businesses to sort of appreciate and acknowledge that they have already taken steps along that net zero journey, that they probably are already doing things because they make business sense. And this campaign, again, is about making net zero relevant and meaningful for small businesses and suggesting a few actions that they might want to take to move themselves along that net zero journey.
Thank you, Catherine. And I think it's really a very positive signal that both you and Anastasia have referred to the extent of engagement among the SME community with the net zero agenda, and then also potentially some of the challenges that SMEs face in starting that journey. So Jonathan, let's come to you. I know that you're involved in Planet Mark, which is working directly with companies to try and help them begin to adopt net zero practices, to use Catherine's term, to start that net zero journey, perhaps. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit more about the work of Planet Mark and how you are actually working directly with companies to sort of encourage them to start that journey.
Yeah, sure thing. So Planet Mark has actually been helping companies measure and reduce carbon since 2013, and we were built for SMEs when our founder, Steve Malkin, he sat down with Sir Tim Smith, the founder of the Eden Project, because he wanted to create a program that, well, first of all, we did it because he's father of three young boys. And I think a lot of people coming into this space are wanting to do more. A lot of it is because they've got kids who are coming home from school and have got climate anxiety, which I'll talk a little bit about later, if I get the opportunity. And he moved out of a PR kind of background of being able to tell really powerful stories and recognize that there's something in that to help make it both really easy, but also profitable for SMEs to start this decarbonization transition. And he wanted to make it as engaging as possible and help people. And there's a thing around connecting better with nature, and like that we've experienced at the start of the first lockdown, where we can feel, you know, a lot better connected with nature. So so Tim said, you know, as long as it's not really boring, essentially, and it is fairly transformational and exciting, then they were happy to get involved. And since then, you know, we've been helping hundreds of organizations, predominantly in the UK, but now around the world. And I think the program itself to unlock that easiness and profitable area before, you know, net zero came along, and I'll talk about how the relation to net zero in a second, is, you know, measure really, really well. And if you can independently verify those measurements, so you can ensure that everything is super accurate and comes from a place of truth, which is really important in this sustainability space. But then we kind of maximize the benefit and set credible targets to reduce every year. And in order to keep the planet mark, you have to be reducing your carbon footprint. If you're not, either in absolute terms or a different intensity metric, then we're going to take it away from you as an incentive to keep reducing. And also, so the planet mark symbol itself remains that symbol of progress. And then we maximize the benefit of doing that measurement and making it really simple element of it by really meaningfully engaging with staff, whether it's, you know, to help them form a committee and a program in which they can take and run themselves, some upskilling and training that Anastasia alluded to that's important for SMEs, that they've been focusing on, really important. And what we didn't want to do is, you know, because of the cost implications or perceived cost implications, is to come in as a consultancy, charge loads of consultancy fees, and then do it all for them, right? What we want to do is upskill people within SMEs so they can take control of the sustainability journey of that company, which has gone really well. And then the other thing we do at the same time is help those companies communicate their sustainability and carbon achievements with other external stakeholders that are important to them, because we know that people want to work for and work with companies that are doing more good. But we want to move away from saying a bunch of words, right, to have it all based on evidence. So how do you credibly tell that story? That's something else that we focus on. So that's kind of a little bit of the history and how we approach carbon and net zero and broader sustainability issues.
That sounds fantastic, Jonathan. And I mean, I'm so, you know, delighted to hear about this enabling role, you know, building the skills of entrepreneurs and the staffs within these companies to try to address the challenges, because I guess that we all recognize that this is a journey for most companies and it's going to be a relatively long one. So it's building that skill base and that consciousness and turning that emotional will to do something into actually skills which can actually transform that into real action, which is going to be critical here, I think, for all of us. I know that you've been adopting some rather interesting sort of promotional sort of devices as you've gone along with your zero carbon tour bus. Tell us a little bit about that, and tell us a little bit about some of the challenges that's surfaced as you've gone around the UK with that particular activity.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So you know, the visionary element of our CEO, Steve Malkin, you know, we sat down back in January, February to talk about what we're going to do around COP itself, right, as this massive opportunity for the country to lead. And how can we showcase what businesses are doing around the UK in order to play an active role in and treat this as a massive opportunity and showcase and sing their praises as much as possible. And so, yeah, so this idea of a bus came along because, you know, it grabs attention, right? And there is some an EV coach that's been developed by a Chinese company called Yutong. And there's a three or four in the UK at the moment. And we commandeered one of them to, first of all, head down to the Eden Project for just post the end of the G7 back in June, if we can remember that, to launch the tour. And then we parked the bus and got on the road again back in Cambridge from the 28th of August to zigzag our way, visiting over 30 local authorities and hosting events throughout the country with three main tour aims. Before I talk about those aims, this would not have been possible without Bayes and Catherine and the Together for Our Planet campaign, in which our objectives were mutually aligned. And so it was an amazing partnership to undertake. And we are forever grateful to Bayes for this and giving us the opportunity to bring the net zero message to businesses and local communities around the country. So three core aims. One is to demystify and kind of go through the carbon jargon that is, you know, net zero, carbon neutrality, raise awareness for COP, raise awareness for Together for Our Planet, so everyone understands what it is, its significance, and what these terms actually mean. Second is to gather carbon stories from around the country of different SMEs and businesses around the UK and what they're doing to decarbonize, to help inspire the change that we need to see both here and around the world, using some very cool videographers, and there's some great videos which we will be sharing. And then thirdly is to help set those net zero targets. So the UN-backed Race to Zero campaign, which Catherine talked about, is a massive opportunity to set those targets and put a plan in place to reduce. So the SME Climate Hub, we've also got a pledge, rawzerocarbontour.com. So make that pledge. And then how are you going to get there, right? Which is what the big thing of, you know, the risk of setting a target and then not putting a strategy in place to sit behind it, which would reduce your credibility, is how do we help you get there, right? And how can we give you tips to get going? And it's not, and you know, again, trying to simplify it as much as possible, because it's not rocket science, but it's just tooling people up.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's really interesting to hear, and it's really interesting to hear how you're taking advantage of the COP26 opportunity to kind of raise the profile of this issue with SME owner managers and SMEs across the country. Catherine, I wondered whether there was something that you wanted to add just around how you felt having COP26 in the UK might actually help you and support your own activity with SMEs.
I think it was just a brilliant opportunity to sort of bring net zero home, really, to sort of really allow small businesses to participate. And again, the way we've done that is to do exactly what Jonathan said, which is to sort of tour the country, really, and take net zero to them, and to sort of, you know, reach out to them, to listen to them more than to be talking to them. You know, we don't want this campaign to be sort of government telling businesses what to do. That's absolutely not what we're sort of aiming for here. It's more about, again, what Jonathan mentioned around gathering these stories. You know, these case studies are just so important, because a huge aspect of the success of the campaign has been generating peer-to-peer action. You know, there's nothing more impactful and powerful than one small business in one part of the country, say, I don't know, a Scottish distillery, again, continuing that theme, talking to another business, say, in Cornwall, the other end of the country, and just, you know, really explaining, you know, this is what net zero means for me. These are the actions that I took as a business. This is how much it cost, importantly, you know, focusing on those granular details. This is how much it cost me to do these actions. This is how much I saved, not just in financial terms, but in carbon saving terms. And that then, again, is a really powerful story that we can promote via social media, via our sort of continued engagement with small businesses. Again, just to, you know, to spread the word, really. I mentioned mass mobilization when I introduced the campaign at the beginning, and that's how we're going to achieve that, is by small businesses talking to others. And we really just want to enable that through all of these different sort of, you know, social stakeholder engagement activities through the campaign, is again just to sort of give them a platform to talk about what they've been doing and to support each other.
Thanks, Catherine. That's very helpful, and it's sort of great to hear about, you know, all of this, all of these attempts to kind of push the net zero message to more widely about that population, and also help to try and build the business case, I think, for investment in these companies, which I think is going to be critical in terms of, you know, persuading the accountants in our firms to actually make the investment decisions. Anastasia, I think the ERC research also suggested something about the business benefits of the kind of adopting the net zero practices that you were talking about before. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yes, exactly. Actually, we have been looking at two things. We have been looking at how actually the net zero practices that UK SMEs are adopting are effective in terms of bringing carbon emissions down. And the second thing, we were interested to look into the relationship between the net zero practices and business performance measured as employment growth, actually. And I think the positive message is that one thing is that net zero practices that SMEs are already doing, they are effective in bringing carbon emissions down, especially the technological solutions. And even these small organizational changes are very beneficial because they will bring businesses to reflect a little bit more, to engage a little bit more, and to invest a little bit more in technological solutions, and then the technological solutions will bring their carbon emissions down. And on the second point, in terms of the business performances, well, actually, we find that net zero practices are positively related to firm growth. And so it's not necessarily a trade-off. So a small business can be contribute positively to a climate agenda, but at the same time, it will not compromise its own growth. So it's kind of a win-win situation, which is a very important message from our findings, I think.
Jonathan, is that a message which companies understand that investing in decarbonisation can be a win for growth as well? Or do they still see it as sometimes as a trade-off between, you know, investing for productivity or for growth or something and for, you know, reducing carbon? What's your understanding of that? What's your perception?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Increasingly so, we're seeing a much greater level of awareness and understanding, and actually a really beautiful set of drivers for why organizations should be doing this. And I'm in a unique position where I am, you know, can be a bit of a, you know, have some interesting connotations around it, but actually selling a product that is going to help that company reduce its emissions, but also maximize that benefit of that measurement and reduction. So I talk to business leaders a lot about why they should be doing this. And back in the day, you know, I'll be saying things like, where there's carbon, there's cost. So actually, if you're reducing your energy consumption, you're reducing your cost. So there may be some upfront investment, but actually, if you take a medium to long term view, the payback really, really good, especially when there are things like feed-in tariffs and stuff like that. Now, if we focus on why it's going to be good for your staff, hiring and retaining talent, which is the classic one, giving staff a greater sense of purpose around what they do, which inevitably reduces staff turnover. So these are the broader cost savings here, but not so direct. And then also the understanding that actually your customers, especially if you're in a corporate supply chain or something, they are but not only going to be mandating this within their supplier contracts, they want you to be actively helping them reduce their own impacts, greening your supply chain and stuff like that. And if you're proactive around that, this is a huge opportunity for you to differentiate, you know, grow, both retain and grow your client relationships, because whether it's the carrot or the stick, this thing's here to stay. So the more proactive you can be around it, the sooner, the more like legacy and stories you're going to be able to build around it to demonstrate that you've been credibly walking the talk for as long as possible. So there's some amazing business benefits and drivers now, and it just makes sense from many different perspectives.
And I think that theme about the supply chain benefits and the customer pressure, whether it's from consumers or other business customers, actually to begin to move along the sort of decarbonisation journey is really an important one. And I think in the ERC research, a very powerful driver of firms' own adoption of these practices. Catherine, I wonder how you get these messages across in a policy sense. How do you communicate those business benefits through the kind of initiatives that you're taking? Is that case studies, or is that other ways of sort of trying to help firms understand what the what the business benefits of the net zero journey are, as well as the sort of environmental ones?
It is predominantly, again, through the campaign, we've had an opportunity here again to sort of use that as a platform for allowing small businesses to communicate with one another, and we would like to continue doing that. But I think from a policy perspective, it's just really important, you know, talking about carrots and sticks, to point out that, you know, there is going to be regulation coming further down the road. We've already announced the petrol diesel car phase out in 2030, so there will be stricter regulations coming along in terms of energy efficiency and home heating, for example. So there are lots of sort of pieces of regulation that are going to be coming out over the next 5 to 10 years, for example. And we want businesses to be prepared. You know, we don't want businesses to see this as challenging their business model. We want them to see this as an opportunity. You know, do I want to be signing that new lease for new petrol diesel cars, for example? You know, or should I be looking to replace my fleet when my lease comes up, for example, with electric vehicles if I can? So again, it's just allowing them to be able to plan, really, to give them that sort of certainty on, in policy sense, that they've been asking us for. And to say, yes, you know, here's the roadmap to net zero. Here's everything that government is going to be doing in the policy space. Here's where regulation is going to be tightened in future. So, you know, as Jonathan said, prepare now. You know, you want to be able to say that you've sort of got ahead of the curve, that you're, you know, prepared for this, that you're going to be more resilient as a business because you have understood these policy changes that are coming down the line. And again, this campaign is about just raising awareness of that policy and saying, look, government is here to support you. We're working with all of these different organizations and stakeholders. We work very closely, for example, with trade associations, focusing on sector specific advice. So we're doing everything we can to communicate clearly to businesses that this is, you know, a one way street, really. There's no going back from this. There's not going to be a change of direction. We are moving towards net zero as a country, and it is in every business's best interest to move with us.
Thanks, Catherine. And I think that message has come across loud and clear from the conversation today. And the necessity of that was very evident, I think, in the COP26 country leaders' presentations yesterday, around this being an imperative for us all as we go forward. Jonathan, I wanted just to pick up one other theme from our previous conversation, and that was around how Planet Mark actually encouraged collaboration between firms, because I think it's in that peer learning and that mutual learning, perhaps, that a lot of the kind of support that Catherine was talking about that businesses might need may arise. So can you say a word or two about how you actually go about that? Because I think that would be very interesting for many of our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, collaboration is critical. I guess three main areas that I'll highlight. One is for Planet Mark members themselves, there's a community platform. Community is quite a popular word at the moment that, you know, perhaps overused, but a platform where people can go and collaborate on shared practices. And what I actually love to see is when a company from a completely different sector has a challenge it's trying to solve, and someone from, say, a university helps a construction firm or something like that, where actually, even within our isolated sectors, it's sometimes there's solutions to those challenges outside that we need to find, and there's some cool theories around that. Secondly, supply chain collaboration. So we work with lots of companies, large companies in the construction sector, for example, who have made a net zero target and commitment, but actually 90% of their emissions sit within scope 3 supply chain impacts and stuff like that, if they use a lot of concrete, for example. So they have to work collaboratively with their suppliers to talk to them about, actually, you need to be measuring, reducing your carbon and giving us data to understand what activities that you're doing associated with our scope 3 carbon footprint, so we can understand what's going on and reduce. So we have things like supplier summits and forums and ways in which to incentivize suppliers to get on board, because they're really key as well. And a lot of them are SMEs, especially in construction. And then the third way is, Catherine talked about working with trade associations and stuff. We work with loads, and that's really interesting because you can get your message out there a lot easier to a whole sector space. And, you know, we have a partnership with someone like the Royal Warrant Holders Association, where in order to reapply and get and re-achieve your Royal Warrant every 3 years, I think it is, maybe 3 to 5, You've got to show tangible environmental improvements in your performance as a business, which is great. And they're, you know, the warrant holders have been around for hundreds of years, so they're sustainable by the very definition, right? But they want to do more, and we run roundtables and stuff like that to create some discussions and forums and share them and just get people talking, which again works incredibly well. And yeah, partnerships is a great way to do that as well.
I think the link to trade associations is a really interesting one. We've been working quite closely with the Cast Metals Federation over the last couple of years. And what you realize when you work with these people is, firstly, their industry knowledge is unparalleled. And secondly, they're very much a trusted broker within the sector. And I think so they are a really interesting kind of partner, I think, for reaching fairly large groups of firms in some of those sectors. So yeah, that's really quite an exciting to hear that you're going down that route. I think we're nearly at time, folks, but perhaps before we finish, we might just do a quick tour de table and ask what might be the main priorities for sort of encouraging more businesses to begin their net zero journey, or continue it a little bit more intensively. So Anastasia, what would be, are there one or two things that you would say would be the kind of key priorities for going forward?
Well, from our research, what we see as the main barrier for adopting net zero is actually the lack of information. And I think what Catherine and Jonathan, they are already doing, some very important steps to remove this barrier. Because actually businesses, even if they are wanting to contribute to this net zero agenda, they probably just don't know where to start. And starting with just simple things like Jonathan, you said, like measuring your impact is actually the huge step to better understanding and better pathway towards net zero reductions. And of course, the better information around the costs, because there's probably still this perception that net zero journey is a costly one, and it's kind of a luxury for an SME, which is financially constrained and resources constrained to fulfill this journey. So I think that what the work that you are doing, both of you, Catherine and Jonathan, is probably the most important one, because we know from what we see in our research that attitudes of business owners and managers, they are quite positive in terms of how they see the environment and the importance of their business in achieving these environmental goals, but they don't know how to start.
Catherine, priority actions from a sort of policy side?
Yep, I think we're all pretty much aligned here. So I would say again, just take that first step. You know, just join the race to zero, make the SME climate commitment, make that first step. And then as Jonathan and Anastasia have been saying again, just focus on measuring and managing and understanding where your emissions are coming from. And none of that has to be difficult. It certainly isn't costly. It doesn't have to be hard. But we're just really focusing on businesses taking that small first step in the right direction.
Thanks, Catherine. And finally, Jonathan, what's the next step for Planet Mark in trying to encourage firms moving forward in this area?
Well, the next step is probably to have, you know, to sit back and have a little rest from all things all related. It's pedal to the metal, whatever that phrase is, going forward. And we can't, you know, it doesn't stop at COP, right? So now we're looking at what's beyond COP and how do we keep this really, you know, important agenda top of organizations' agendas, which right now it is, and we need to keep it there, which is really exciting. There's lots of cool plans going on, but yeah, there isn't much more to add to what Anastasia and Catherine just said. We are very much aligned in what needs to be doing. So yeah, set a target, measure, and talk about it. Talk about the journey, talk about the challenges, and help demonstrate some shared learning. And yeah, let's roll our sleeves up and get on with this thing now, which is, you know, really exciting.
It's been a great conversation today. Thank you, everyone. I've really enjoyed that. And I think it gives us really some optimism for the future, both in terms of the research and the motivation of entrepreneurs, but also some of the very practical steps that we can take as we, as firms and as supporters of firms, begin the net zero journey. So thank you for the conversation. Thank you to all of those listening to the podcast too today. If you've enjoyed it and want to find out more, including links to the other ERC podcasts, you can find more at www.enterpriseresearch.ac.uk. I will include on the website some of the links to some of the things that we've talked about before, that Catherine was talking about, the Policy Hub, and also a link to Planet Mark. Thank you for listening today, and a very goodbye from all of us here.